Welcome to another episode of High Velocity Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and as usual, we're having our annual Saren B special, and I'm in the studio today with Tammy Cook with Les Dames de Escoffier International. I know I butchered that.
Just a little bit. That's okay. Les Dames de Escoffier International.
I have no excuse. Half my family lives in France and is French. But
then you have absolutely no excuse
at all. Well, this is we're here to talk about the 13th annual Afternoon in the Country at Saren B. Welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit about the organization and about this event that you guys do. I absolutely love it. So
great. Thanks for having us. So our Afternoon in the Country event, which is Sunday, November 3rd at the Saren B community down in Palmetto, Georgia. The event is 1 to 4, and it is our major fundraiser for our organization each year. Last year we raised about $95,000, and we're hoping to surpass that $100,000 mark this year at the event.
Definitely. Well, tell me a little bit about the organization and what you guys do.
So Les Dames de Escoffier is an international organization that was founded in 1976 by a woman named Carol Brock in New York City. And we are an organization of women leaders who create a supportive culture in their communities to achieve excellence in the food, beverage, and hospitality professions. We do this by sharing knowledge. We support members, and we provide leadership and educational opportunities. And most important for our chapter here in Atlanta is our philanthropic efforts. In our chapter, and every chapter across the nation is a little bit different, but we raise money for worthwhile organizations in our community, as well as the bulk of the money that we raise goes to scholarships for women in Georgia who are pursuing degrees in culinary arts, hospitality, agriculture, and anything that has to do with getting good food to good people.
Definitely. Well, talk a little bit about the pains that I don't think people realize, the pains that women have trying to get into these industries. They're very male-centric industries, and it is difficult getting in.
It is. You know, it's kind of funny when you think about who prepares your meals at home growing up. It's primarily a female job. And I think that's why Carol Brock in 1976 noticed that none of the positions in restaurants or managing restaurants or working in hospitality, none of the leadership positions were being held by women. And so she wanted to start an organization that would support that.
All right. So how long have you been part of the organization? How long has the Atlanta chapter been around?
The Atlanta chapter has been around since 1996. I've been a member for about 7 years now. It's an invitational organization, so we don't just, you know,
accept
applications. You have to be recommended by another member. You have to have at least 5 years of experience in your field and be considered a leader in your area of expertise.
That seems pretty interesting. Normally, organizations just want to take everyone, but you want the cream of the crop to make sure that you guys have people that can actually help and get the information out there.
Absolutely.
Well, you brought some people in the studio today with us that show that message. Who's in the studio today with us?
So today, I'm happy to have my friend Virginia Willis. Virginia is a cookbook author, a television producer, and she and I actually met in the middle of nowhere in France. on a sunny afternoon when I had arrived there to do a stage at a cooking school. And I heard this voice across the railroad tracks. And, you'll hear Virginia's voice in a minute.
But definitely.
Virginia's here with us today. And Susan Pavlin, who is the executive director of Global Growers Network. And I'll let both of them tell you a little bit about themselves.
Well, ladies, welcome to the show. I think we'll start first with Virginia. And one of my bosses, before he left, he's like, this is the grits woman. She knows her grits. And he loves grits.
He
talks about grits almost on every show that he hosts. So Stone's always talking about cheese grits. So welcome to the show. Give us a little background about yourself. And
Thank you so much for having me. So I am I'm Southern, as you can hear, but I'm a French-trained chef. And lived and worked in France, met Tammy in France for many years. And my style of cooking is a style of cooking that I call refined Southern cuisine. So I celebrate Southern food and cooking, but I bring a little bit of French technique to it. My first cookbook was called Bon Appetit, Y'all, and that's my trademark style. And I love being a member of Les Dames de Escoffier, the work that we do, the philanthropic work that we do and education it feeds my soul and brain too. It's more than about just food and cooking. It's a lifestyle.
Definitely. Well, I can believe that giving back is always very fulfilling. How did you decide that you wanted to be a chef? When was it? Were you a little girl and you're like, I just love cooking so much, and it just grew from there?
Well, there are photographs of me making biscuits with my grandmother at 3 years old, and one of my favorite stories is actually that when I was a toddler, she had a double steel sink, and she would shell beans on one side of the sink and then have me sitting in the other side of the sink. So I was basically born in a kitchen. I've always loved to cook, and I have a degree in history. I was not in the culinary field for a period of time, and then basically in my mid-20s, I wasn't happy with my job. And I thought, I can't not, you know, it's too early not to be happy, right? So I pursued culinary school and educational training with food and cooking, and have been doing it for 20 years now, and I can't imagine doing anything different.
So you decided, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to live the dream. I'm going to go live in Paris and cook. Talk to that a little bit. How do you just go move to Paris? Did you speak French when you moved there, or was it a spontaneous thing or an opportunity bubbled up?
Well, I actually apprenticed in the United States with another member who's a member of Les Dames Escoffier, Natalie Dupree, who is the doyenne of Southern cooking, James Beard Award winner, International Association of Culinary Professionals Award winner. She's a grand dame with Les Dames Escoffier. She is my dear friend and mentor. And I apprenticed with her for a year before I moved to France. And I took French lessons, but there was a very pivotal moment of laying face down on a bed crying because I thought I was in over my head in Paris. The ATM card wouldn't work, and it was just a long ways from home, and I was sort of terrified. And that was a pivotal moment in my life, but somehow I got an ATM card that worked, and then somehow that happened, and then, you know, life sort of turned around. But I was supposed to be in France for 3 months, and I was in France for 3 years. So
wow, how was the communication in the kitchen?
The kitchen, there's kitchen French, so there's definitely a couple cuss words thrown in there. And basically, you know, with a chef, if you don't understand the language, there's a lot to be said for body language. There's a lot to be said for the scream factor. You know, you can pretty much in tune what you're supposed to do if you're not doing it fairly quickly in a French kitchen. And then there's also, knowing what to do. Once you're trained, you don't have to be told.
Autopilot.
You get on autopilot, and it kind of doesn't matter what language is being spoken.
So I know culturally in France, the opposite of the U.S., it's the men's role to be in the kitchen. It's
right.
a very thing. Did you find that to be hard for you to break in the industry? Do people treat you less there, or was that there?
It's challenging. I mean, I think that one thing that is sort of interesting is that, like what Tammy said earlier, is that women cook the food in the kitchen, but as soon as it turns into a paying profession, it becomes a male-dominated role. It's just part of life. It's part of me. It's the same thing as like having green eyes. It's just part of life. So I can't let that hold me back. So working in the French kitchen was definitely different. They start their educational system completely differently than we do. And so early on in high school, if you don't have an aptitude to go to college, then you basically are sent on a trade school route. So I was working with, you know, 15, 16-year-old French boys, which is which is really different.
I can imagine.
but being in the kitchen, there was a little bit of a bubble about being a female American.
Yeah, definitely.
A little bit of protection.
Was it more being a female or more being an American?
A little bit of both. It was definitely a little bit of both. I mean, not that I wasn't. I worked hard. I would sleep between shifts on the floor in the dining room. I mean, it was really hard work. There was a certain aggression that the French chef would have for these young boys trying to teach them. I literally saw a chef try to shove a kid in the oven. I mean, it was...
Wow.
So that wouldn't happen to me. it doesn't have... The ability to cook, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with being male or female. So we have to
definitely.
Look
once
past
you prove,
that.
proved your stuff, your grits.
Exactly.
There was no problem at all. Exactly. All right, so what are you doing with Afternoon in the Country? What are you doing for Serenby?
Oh, I just love being a supporter of Serenby and the fact that we're able to give so much in scholarship money. I am actually a scholarship recipient. And
okay.
I've always...
You're the proof of the pudding.
I am exactly the proof of the pudding. And I am so appreciative of this group and just so thankful. When culinary school is expensive.
Definitely.
When I was in culinary school, which will tell you how old I am, but it was $20,000 a year, and I think it's now $40,000 a year.
It's ridiculous.
It's significant. So so it's really just amazing to see these incredible young women that are trying to live the dream. They're trying to do what they want to do. It's also very heartening to see the money that we give to organizations like Georgia Organics and the Atlanta Community Food Bank, Serenby, but it's really a big party. It's this big, beautiful party in a beautiful setting with amazing food. And the food community in Atlanta is a very tight-knit community.
Yeah.
It's not, the chefs aren't necessarily, I mean, there's healthy competition. But the chefs are very freely giving with food and information to one another. The farmers are all very interconnected. The farmers are interconnected with the chefs. I mean, it's really a very family-like atmosphere. And so this is a great big family reunion.
Definitely. Well, what advice would you give to someone that wants to be you when they grow up, and how do they break into the industry? Another woman.
One of the things I always suggest to people, because I do mentor some folks coming up in the industry, and it's really more of an analogy, but raise your hand. I think that so many of the opportunities that I've had come my way have been because I've been there to volunteer for them. So when I was in culinary school, the chef wanted someone to strain the stock, raise my hand. Clean out the walk-in, raise my hand. Work at the farmer's market with LaDom's, raise my hand. So if you are continuously putting yourself out there in a situation where you're volunteering, then you never know what might come your way. So if you have a reputation as a good worker, a strong person, then when something sort of pops, then you're there front and present in someone's mind. So raise your hand.
Also, last piece of advice for any listeners out there that want to be you. There's so many different schools now that are offering culinary arts. You're bombarded with it on the internet. Everyone's saying they're the best and they can get you a job. What advice would you give a kid out there that to choose between these schools, because they're being pressured so much by these schools that are these businesses now.
Right.
They're trying to get people to join. And a lot of these people are kids that might not make it in the cooking industry, and then they get pushed with $100,000 of debt.
This is very true. So people have to go in eyes wide open. The first thing I would say, if someone is considering going to culinary school, is to get a job in a restaurant and work a couple months or work for a period of time to see if they actually want to work in a restaurant. Basically, there's a perception now that anyone that can pick up a butter knife wants to be on food television,
mm-hmm.
which is an incredibly hard business to be in and to break into. So my first thing would say for someone that wants to get into this industry would be get a job in a restaurant, even if that's not what you want to do at the end, because I'm not a restaurateur, but I have restaurant experience. So to get a job working in a kitchen, and then to visit the schools, because there are student loan factories. There's no doubt about that. So it's a very important decision. So people need to...
So go get experience before you decide to get the degree.
Exactly.
Because it's a high-pressure environment. I have a couple friends that are chefs, and it's not an easy job
at all. No. And then do your homework. Ask to speak to some alumni. Do due diligence. And understand the situation before you get $100,000 in debt.
Definitely. All right. Well, what's next for you? And give us some contact information so our listeners can reach out.
I've got, speaking of grits, I have a little grits book coming out at Thanksgiving. And lots of different things going on. But people can find me if they go to my website, which is virginiawillis.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on. And it's such great information.
Thank you.
All right. Well, next up on High Velocity, we're going to be talking with Susan Pavlin, the Executive Director of Global Growers Network. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the Global Growers Network.
Well, Global Growers Network is a local nonprofit. We started a handful of years ago, and our mission is really focused on connecting international farmers, international growers who are living here, in, particularly in Metro Atlanta, but in all of Georgia, to agricultural opportunities. Many of the people we work with were forced out of their home countries. Usually they're war survivors or genocide survivors, and they come to Metro Atlanta with an incredible amount of experience as farmers and experience with the local food economy.
Okay, so you guys help them sort of match them up with different farms, local farms, and help get them jobs because they are experienced.
That's exactly right. We operate four different farm or growing sites, ranging from a small community garden to a 14-acre training farm site. And then we also work with a network of other garden and farm projects. And altogether, we're working with well over 230 families from the international community.
How has had the farm-to-table movement, how has that helped grow these farms? Has it been really good for them, or...?
I think it's been an incredible nexus. You know, when people come here from other countries, particularly in that kind of war context, they often have very few resources. So they're really looking to get their feet on the ground. And at the same time, those people who have really grown up in agriculture have an incredible amount of expertise in an area that has become really important. As the farm-to-table movement has grown and has the focus on local food and the local economy of food grown, it creates they're essentially a resource for something that most of us are trying to either establish or in some cases recapture, which is a connection to our local food.
So how did you get into this? This sounds like a great thing. I can tell you're passionate about it, and you love your job. But how did you decide to do this? This is definitely a different angle than what they teach you in college.
It is, and I started out my career as an international lawyer, so I'm very far away from this world. But basically what happened was that I had developed a passion for growing food. At the same time, I was working in the international community. And I decided I wanted to start a small growing project, maybe find a little bit of land. I lived in a very industrial part of Atlanta.
Okay.
So I wanted to find a little bit of land, and I wanted a couple of partners to do it with so I wouldn't be so intimidated. I was looking for
partners are great.
Yeah, I was looking for a Saturday morning garden experience. But I met these two guys from East Africa. They were recent immigrants from East Africa, survivors of some genocide in that area. And they had been farmers back home, and I went to them and said, hey, would you like to do this together? Maybe we can find a little bit of land. And they came back 3 days later with a list of 35 names, addresses, and phone numbers and said, okay, we're ready. Where's our farm?
Wow.
And what I realized is that I had tapped into something that it wasn't just my idea that it would be amazing, but it was something that was incredibly important to these people as a way of connecting to their own culture, their own identity, and their own need to know where their food came from, which is exactly what the local food movement is all about.
Definitely. Do you only deal with immigrants, or do you also deal with, I know a lot of people take kids that don't really know their way, they're not sure what they're doing, and they'll go work on a farm for a few months and sort of find themselves and just learn some good lessons about life.
Well, we certainly started out with that international focus. We have expanded since then. The area where we have found the most connection has been with Georgia-born farmers who are often farmers of color, people who have not had as much access to the local food movement as we would like. And so what we've been able to do is link some of our international farmers with these other small farmers. And basically, they're dealing with a lot of the same challenges. Building a small farm business operation, being able to sustainably grow food and get it to the markets and make a living that way is something that's completely doable, but you need to figure out how to do it. And that's what we work with the international farmers to do, as well as a lot of the Georgia-born farmers.
Well, it sounds like you guys are building a network that really helps all these small farmers get connected together. And if one's having a problem, someone else can maybe give them some advice how to solve that problem.
That's exactly right. And in fact, later in November, we're doing this great farm tour. We're partnering with a couple of urban farm organizations, Georgia Organics, Truly Living Well, and we're doing a tour of established Georgia farmers around the metro area that are known for their sustainable, successful business.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, you want to shout out how people might sign up for that tour? Or?
Well, unfortunately, that's really for our farmers specifically.
Only for the farmers specifically?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
But
so
it is that connection of making those links.
Can't get in on that. Uh-huh.
You can talk to me after.
So how has been part of Le Dom's? How has that helped you out and with your business and grow that?
Our connection with Le Dom's has been absolutely fantastic. I know that we have a tremendous resource of all of these international farmers, but also international chefs that, you know, they may not carry the title of chef, but boy, can they produce something pretty amazing. And of course, our farmers that grow some specialty products, some really culinary specialty products out in the field because it's part of what their cultural tradition is. Le Dom's has been instrumental in helping to do two things, really. One is to share the story of what these farmers are doing and what they can bring to the Atlanta culinary world. And then the other has been an incredible support, both in person and financially, to help us really jump our game up to the next level. I mean, we started out as a little garden, and last year we grew over 100,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
And Le Dom's was instrumental in helping us build the refrigerator space and the market space that we needed to be able to actually translate that from the field into the kitchen.
Wow. So what do you guys need more of? Do you need more farmers? Do you need more connections to businesses? Or what do you guys need?
I'm laughing because, you know, we always could use a little extra money, right?
Yeah, all right,
it helps
definitely.
Us jump things forward. But support for some of our events is really phenomenal. Financial support is always incredible. And we're really working hard to build the infrastructure that we need to make this a longstanding contribution to the community, not just a flash in the pan.
Definitely. So, yeah. Well, I love your movement. What are you guys doing with Afternoon in the Country?
Well, we're going to be at Afternoon in the Country. We have an opportunity to share with all of the folks that are there a little bit more about our organization. And I'm just really excited to be there and to have a presence.
All right. Well,
Susan, can you talk about the event on November 20th?
Absolutely, I would love to. So Global Growers Network is hosting an event on November 20th. It's in the Wednesday evening, a cocktail party called Toast to the Culture in Agriculture. And it's going to be over in Decatur. You can find out more information about on our website. But it is a really great opportunity to bring people together. We're going to have the women from our farms that cook from Burundi, from Bhutan, from Burma, doing some tastings from their cultural tradition, and we'll have a great mix of cocktails and some movies and photos.
Like a blast. Well, let our listeners know your contact information, how they learn more about all these events, and reach out, how they can donate. So
yes, and volunteer. It's globalgrowers.net.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on.
Absolutely.
All right, Tammy. Well, we had a late joiner and the guest with us. Who do we have with us?
We did. We had Monique Allen join us. Monique was, so I spoke a little bit at the beginning about our scholarship program. This past year, we gave away, I think it's 19 scholarships to 19
wow.
different women.
That's huge, and that's a lot of money, too. We're just talking about how expensive these schools are.
Yeah, we gave away, I think, the number was close to $70,000 this year.
Woo!
And it was funny. We were at our international conference this past weekend in Austin, and I was strutting around very proud because we give away a lot more money than some of the other chapters in our organization. So I was very proud of that. But anyways, Monique was one of our scholarship recipients this year. And we just awarded our scholarships back at the beginning of the fall in September. And Monique has already volunteered at a couple of our activities that we've had. We have a culinary yard sale at a local farmer's market every year, and she's already volunteered for that. And volunteered at a panel that I believe Virginia spoke at Georgia State just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm feeling like we sure can pick them.
Definitely. You bring in the people in the community that want to give back. So it seems like everyone follows your philosophy. So that's great. Well, Monique, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how the scholarships helped you in that process.
Well, I am a senior at Georgia State University in the Hospitality Business Administration program.
That's a great program. We've had some people on from there before. So.
Oh, yes. Well, I plan to open my own bakery after graduation, So I'm in the works with that. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, no, just definitely go for it. That's what I tell everybody. So we had the guy that started Sublime Donuts in here last week. So
we like him. You know, him.
Yes,
he is his awesome story and just the way he did it. So he's definitely. So talk about going to school and how much the scholarships helped you out. And
well, the scholarship has been wonderful. I'm so grateful to be able to have the access to the DOMS and to have volunteered and get to know more about the people that who gave me the scholarship. So definitely to show my appreciation
for that.
And this scholarship has definitely empowered me as a woman to continue on with my education and to grow and build my career.
We love to hear that. So what made you decide you wanted to get in the hospitality industry? You wanted to start your own bakery. What started that passion? When it was just a little girl and you like your Easy Bake Oven and I had one of those, by the way.
I got burnt by that.
So. I was the only kid that had an Easy Bake Oven, but I just loved cooking so much.
Yeah, that light bulb was no joke.
Yeah.
Well, I've been baking since I was 11, and I went to culinary school at the Art Institute of Atlanta.
Okay, I went there also.
Awesome. More AIA alumni. Well, that definitely enhanced my passion for baking and pastry, and I'd like to make healthier items.
Mm-hmm.
Now I notice a lot of my clients are more health conscious, so I'm
definitely
getting into the gluten-free and sugar-free items. I'm working with the family now. They have all had gastric bypass surgery.
Okay.
So, you know, working with people who have special menu issues and
definitely.
Allergies.
That's huge.
So I'd like to get into that as well and so include that in my bakery.
Definitely. Well, gluten-free is huge, and people like to call it a trend, but it's not a trend. This has been a major problem. Kids
yes.
are born every day with just gluten intolerance. They can't have gluten, and there aren't that many tasty things out there. So it's good that this crazy is going
truth.
On. So how close to graduating are you?
Well, I'm graduating in December of 2014.
Okay, so not
yes.
too far away.
Not too
about
far.
One more year.
One more year. I'm ready to strut down that stage.
You're going to strut.
I bet you will, too. I bet you will. Good for you, girl.
Thank you.
So Tammy was talking about how you've been volunteering with LaDOMS events. What else are you planning to do with LaDOMS? Are you going to be there forever from now on? Is that going to be an organization you're definitely going to be with?
I would love that. I will be at the Afternoon in the Country on Sunday.
You are lucky.
So I'm excited to get to learn more about the organization. And I would, let me say that again, I would love to be part of LaDOMS.
Well, it sounds like a great thing. So what's next for you other than graduating? What else are you working on right now? And
well,
how can we help you here?
Oh, wow. I wasn't expected to hear that question on the radio. Put me on the spot. Well, I'd like to learn more about owning my own business and what else I need to know. And I'd like to have a mentor.
Definitely.
So I'd like to write a healthy cookbook as well. So Virginia and I spoke.
Yes. We have some high-level people right here.
Yes. So this is the place to start.
Well, that's one of the things that's awesome about LaDOMS is there are, you know, there are people that are restaurant chefs. There are people that are cookbook authors. There are people that are test kitchen directors. There are people that are nutritionists. There's PR and marketing and hospitality professionals. So it's all about food and cooking, but there's so many different careers within the culinary field.
Definitely.
And so you can connect with four different trades basically within one group and having that access to the knowledge. And then also I think it's important to understand because it is so challenging to find your place and career in that. And so to have it be reciprocated, to want a mentor, and then for someone like you who you show up, you raise your hand, you volunteer, you do all those things. So people that want to mentor would be more inclined to mentor someone who shows up, who is present and really isn't just asking, but also sharing.
Thank you.
Well, Monique, how do our listeners reach out? They're listening to you and they say, you know, I want to be like that. I want to try to get a scholarship. I want to grow up. I want to try to own my own business. I want to have that passion. How do they reach out and contact you?
To contact me?
Yes. I'm sure young people have a lot of questions. They want to contact people that are on their up and up. So,
well, I'm on LinkedIn.
All right.
And my bakery will be called Daisy Flowers, Flours. So incorporating the gluten-free using different kinds of flowers. Thank you. So look for me on LinkedIn. I am Monique Allen, and it'll say owner of Daisy Flowers Signature Cupcakes and Cookies.
And we would love to have you back on once you get that started to help promote that and get you on here and talk about that. So
thank you.
So just let us know and we'll have you back on in a heartbeat.
I will. Thank you.
All right, Tammy, you must be beaming with pride. Just all these high-level people. You got people like Monique that are going to be the future of the organization. So
yes.
You must be just loving it right here.
It is a great organization, and I also am someone who received a scholarship from Les Dames d'Escoffier when I was in culinary school. And my goal when I graduated, one of my goals was to become a member of the organization and then to become a member of the scholarship committee and then to lead the scholarship committee so I could continue to give back to the organization.
I love this method of giving back, collaboration, and, you know, just to be honest, just to point out, guys don't do that for some reason. Women, they're great. Both my stepmom and my mom grew their own business, and I saw that everyone collaborates. You help each other out, try to pick each other up, and I think that's just amazing. That's a great philosophy.
It is. You know, there is healthy competition. It's not that we all don't want to, you know, achieve our goals. I think the difference is, and especially I've found in this organization, unlike other organizations that I'm a member of as a professional, they give me something else. But this organization not only gives me support professionally, but I've made lifelong friends. And no one has ever said when I've called them up to ask a question, "I'm sorry, I can't help you." There's always a hand there.
That sounds great. So let's talk a little bit about Afternoon in the Country. Tell us a little more about the event. I think it's the most intimate food event, really, of the year that goes on.
It is. It's a wonderful event. And I think one of the things that makes it unique is that we do not have to, like, kind of beat the bushes and get chefs to get involved with this event. Every year, they start calling us a couple of months before the event.
Well, they want to be part of it, definitely.
And they want to be a part of it. And that just kind of that kind of attitude permeates throughout the event. So you buy a ticket, you show up to Serenbe, which is a beautiful planned community down in Palmetto, Georgia. And it could not be more ideal. It's you know, in the middle of a pasture, and there are old barns all around, and we set up tables with food and wine, delicious food and wine, and we have a silent auction that you can bid on these great experiences. I was just looking at the list last night. We're giving away a jazz dinner for, I believe, 10 or 12 people with 8 different local chefs in Atlanta, and Francine Reed will come to the dinner and serenade you. We also have a cake raffle.
Ooh.
Which is probably one of the most competitive things about the day, because all of the pastry chefs and all of the home bakers who really enjoy making fancy cakes, which I cannot do to save my life, but we have basically an old-fashioned, I wish one year we would actually do a cakewalk, but we don't do it that way. We have people who bid on the cakes,
yeah.
And you get to actually carry your beautiful cake away from the event.
Wow.
With you. Yeah, so that's a really fun highlight.
Well, I know it's this upcoming Sunday, right, the event is?
It's this upcoming Sunday.
Can people still purchase tickets, or is they all sold out? Because it is a very, very popular event.
Yeah, it sold out about 2 weeks ago. So
so now that you're listening to this, buy your tickets for next year.
Yes, buy your tickets for next year.
One of the things that people can do is, like, follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and then they can become aware sooner about these very sought-after tickets.
Yes. Yes. And you can participate with our organization throughout the year. We have monthly chapter meetings, and a certain number of those evenings are open to the public every year. So you can find us through ldeiatlanta.org and ask to be put on our mailing list.
Okay.
And you can receive an e-vite.
Can people, even though they can't buy tickets, can they still donate some way to help you guys out with your scholarship?
Amen.
Absolutely. Yes. Again, you can go to ldeiatlanta.org and make a donation anytime you like. And if I'm not clear if there's a link on there, but if you just leave a message on that website, I believe the president chapter, Shelley Peterson, checks that every day, and she will make it possible for you to make a donation.
Well, before we wrap up, tell our listeners how to contact again. I want the contact information one more time. I know you just said it twice. And also tell them what's going on in 2014. What do you guys got coming up?
All right. So, again, it's ldeiatlanta.org. And I think 2014, we are looking forward to probably our chapter meeting that happens in March. We do this really fun event called Dinner in a Movie, where we try to find some either local filmmakers or some Southern filmmakers, and we share some food-centric movies with our organization and with the public. And we usually partner with Kathy Conway, who is one of our members of Avalon Catering, and she prepares a meal that's based around the movies that we show. And we saw one just a couple of weeks ago, or actually just at our event this past week, on the Czech community in Texas. And so we're going to be, there's a huge Czech community that settled in Central Texas, and it's called Czech's Links, because there is a ton of sausage makers in the middle of Texas who make sausage the old Czech style. So we'll be showing that movie and having some great sausage.
Yeah. That sounds like a blast.
And we'll be, you know, we'll be raising money all year for our scholarship fund, and hoping that we can get, my goal this year is that we'll have $70,000 to give away in scholarships.
That would be huge. Well, I'm sure you guys will reach it, so you guys are all very proactive. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for being on, ladies. We really appreciate having you guys and getting the word out.
Thank you so much for having us.
We'd love to have you back on, and definitely we'll have you next year for the annual CR&B Afternoon in the Country. It's Lee, our owner's favorite event, so he always goes every year, so it takes his wife.
Great.
So this is Kevin Finn for all our guests today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on High Velocity Radio.